Presenting the Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Ryan, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we celebrate the year in film as we cover our top 10 favorite films of 2013.
Yes, we should say this. This is the last Cinema Jaw of 2013.
Boy, did it go quick, didn't it?
Yeah, dude. My life is just flying by breakneck speed.
Great year for cinema, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a really fantastic year. Lots of good superhero movies.
Oh, geez. Don't tell me you're going to have superhero movies cluttering your top 10 list.
There are capes dripping out the side of my list.
We shouldn't expect anything less from you, Matt.
Capes and tights.
We are covering our top 10 movies of 2013. We have a great guest that's going to be joining us. Absolutely. We wanted to go out and get the best. You know what I mean?
Yep.
We got the vice president of the Chicago Film Critics Association, Brian Tallarico, making his second appearance on Cinema Jaw. He has his list of top 10 films of 2013.
This is going to be fun.
Sure is. In addition to that, we are also going to pick out our worst film of 2013, one that if the Jawheads have not seen yet, they should avoid.
Yeah.
We also,
that's not going to be hard. There was a lot of really crappy movies,
there were
too.
Some duds. There definitely were. And we threw that question out to the Jawheads as well on Twitter. We have theater reviews of August, Osage County, and The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Plus, streaming on Netflix is the documentary
Blackfish.
We both saw that. So I know Brian's seen it as well. I can't wait to review that as well.
Yeah, me neither.
Plus, in honor of the end of the year, you will be taking Brian on in 2013 movie trivia, plus a cinema war with the Coen brothers having Inside Llewyn Davis out in theaters. We got us thinking, what other sibling duo is a great directing team? So we got a cinema war looking at the Wachowskis first.
The Farrelly brothers.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
All right.
Jam packed up, as always. So without further ado, we bring in our guest. Since the last time he appeared, Brian Tallarico now is a contributor over at RogerEbert.com. Can't wait to talk to him about that. Brian, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Thanks for having me.
He also had another kid.
Yes, congratulations, first and foremost.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy year. Professionally, it's been the best year of my life, so I'm happy to end it here with you guys.
That's great. Now,
thanks, man.
You heard us talking a little bit right before we brought you on here. Mm-hmm. Do you agree 2013 was a great year for cinema?
It was a fantastic year. One of the best years of the last 20, I would say, and the best since 07. We were talking before that 07 was an amazing year with Zodiac and There Will Be Blood and No Country, and this is the best year since then.
Wow. So. High praise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And 2014...
I don't know. There's some things I'm interested in. There's some really like crazy. Noah's a crazy project. There's some crazy
Noah
projects. Interstellar, new Nolan, that no one knows anything about.
I know.
There's a whole lot of projects. It's like, what is that?
You know what I'm waiting for though? 2015. We get Star Wars. We get Avengers 2.
Oh, jeez, man.
Oh, Lord.
Don't jump ahead. But really quick on that Interstellar, the teaser that just came out. I loved it because it's just intriguing.
Yes, exactly. And I'm going to Sundance in a few weeks, and the Sundance lineup is incredible. And I know hardly anything about any of it, but I read the descriptions. I read who's in it. I think this could be another promising year.
Well, let's start with Sundance. Have you been out there before, Brian?
I was there this year. I had a great time this year, and I got really lucky. I talked to a lot of people who were amazed that my freshman track record at Sundance was as good as it was. I saw Before Midnight. I saw Ink and Body Saints. I saw Mud. I saw Way, Way Back. I saw lots of great movies before they came out here.
Yeah, and part of the reason you were saying that you went out there, maybe not even this year, but going out there in 2014 is an exciting project we have going on in Chicago, mm-hmm. which is the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is the first of its kind as far as critics go in the country. And that is taking place again the second time, and it's moved venues to downtown Chicago. Is that correct?
We moved from Rosemont to the Music Box Theater. We had a great first year in Rosemont. Things went better than we ever could have imagined. We had Sarah Polley introduce Stories We Tell. We had William Friedkin show a really rare print of Sorcerer, which is an amazing movie. It was the first time that print had been shown in ages. And like we had to get it from Europe and examined by specialists before we could even show it. And that was incredible. And they're remastering it now for Blu-ray from that print we had in Rosemont.
Wow.
So that was an amazing event. We had James Ponsoldt close it out with The Spectacular Now, which is a great film. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I have.
So, it went great. But you know what? It was Rosemont. And Rosemont's a little distant. And it hurt our ticket sales a little bit by being in Rosemont. And so we moved down to the Music Box, and it's going to be even better, bigger. We're going a full week, May 9th through 15th. Go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com for announcements.
That is awesome. And also, as I mentioned, something that's changed since the last time you were here is you are now a contributor over at RogerEbert.com. tell us, A, I guess the Jawheads a little bit about the website as well, okay. Because they don't just review film there, it's also television and...
Well, it was primarily just film when I jumped on and said, you know, with stuff like Phil Spector and Behind the Candelabra and Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are doing an HBO TV series in January.
Yeah,
like the lines between film and TV are blurring more than ever. And so I was like, you know, and Roger, before he passed, did a reviewed Phil Spector, the David Mamet movie that aired on HBO. And I was like, so there was a little bit of movement into that world. And so I suggested, hey, let me, given that I've done TV longer than I've done film, believe it or not. So I know both forms very well. I was like, let me be the guy to try to help guide the audience with this new crazy world we're in. So like, I'm covering True Detective in a couple weeks. I reviewed the Bonnie and Clyde remake, just as a recent example, Darabont's Mob City. I don't like come out and talk about Two and a Half Men. I kind of try to keep it interesting to a film audience.
Gotcha. Yeah. And while we're talking about that, I did catch the Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I love it.
I thought it was awesome.
Oh, it's great.
Performances by Michael Douglas and Matt Damon. Matt Damon was hysterical in there.
I think there are very few filmmakers in the last quarter century as important as Steven Soderbergh. I bow at the altar of Steven Soderbergh, so I loved it. And I think it's a great final film if it ends up being his final film, which he's claimed it will be.
We'll see about that.
I love that he claimed it was his final film and announced he's doing a TV series like a week later. It's right. Like, you're not really retiring. You're just doing other stuff, and you'll make another movie eventually.
And what I thought was so interesting about that film is it was a fine line they had to walk. You didn't want to make fun of Liberace. No, but you wanted to have fun with the subject, and I thought they nailed that because I was laughing, but I didn't feel like I was laughing at Liberace as much as I was laughing alongside the whole spectacle that it was, you know?
I adore craftsman filmmakers, the ones where every fine detail, and Soderbergh can take something like Side Effects, which was a great film, and make that work. People like him and Fincher and the Coens, where there's not a single shot or beat or thing out of place, and I've felt that in Candelabra like I have in all his works lately. I'll defend Che. I love Soderbergh.
Don't do that. That is really defending. That was. I remember my initial line, Matt, when I reviewed it here on Cinema Jaws. I want my 4.5 hours of my life back.
I want to watch all 4.5 hours again right now.
That was painful.
Yeah, that's too long, man. Come on.
That was painful. But for the Jawheads that don't realize this, there's multiple contributors at RogerEbert.com. So it sort of turned into a community of reviewers where you can go on and read different perspectives.
And I do some film stuff, too. I interviewed Oscar Isaac for Llewyn Davis, and I just interviewed Adam McKay for Anchorman 2, which posted today. So I do some of that kind of stuff, too, for them.
So Jawheads, definitely check out RogerEbert.com.
Go to contributors. You'll see Brian Tallarico.
Awesome.
Include myself.
And a couple other places where you're at. We are friends with Hollywood Chicago.
Yep.
We've had Adam Fendelman on here. You also write TV reviews and movie reviews as well.
I'm the content director over there. Kind of help try to guide the content and do a lot of reviews there. I am the PlayStation critic for About.com. I'm covering Sundays for Film Threat, and I've written some stuff for them before.
Nice.
And I do a lot of freelancing for FearNet. I do horror stuff for them. I need to start BrianTallarico.com so people could just go there and portal to everything.
I'm pretty sure you were talking about Brian Tallarico.
Yeah, but things got a little busy.
Did you buy the URL, man?
I keep checking. It's out there. I'll do it. Nobody snag that.
I mean, this guy is the critic's critic. You know what I mean? He reviews everything.
I do. It's crazy.
A really quick review on the PBR that you're drinking here on Cinema Jaw.
It's tasty. I always forget how tasty it is.
Awesome. Like I say, Matt, we got a perfect guest to cover
absolutely.
Our top 10
yes.
of 2013. Do you have a number of films that you saw this year? Did you keep track? Were you?
I do, but I didn't go check. I think it was 300 or somewhere in that area.
That is heavy.
Yeah. It's nuts. And like 100 of them probably in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm lucky enough to be in the CFCA. I'm the vice president, so we get screeners. I mean, we had over almost 90 screeners this year, and they just stack up, and you got to try. I try to go with the theory. If they took the time to send it to me, I'm going to take the time to watch it. So I'm really trying to get through them all.
That's nice. You're a quality voter. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
Not one of these guys that watches it for 5 minutes and then like, that was a piece of crap.
No, I try to give everything full consideration. So
awesome. And you're on Twitter as well for the Jawheads that want to follow some of your reviews.
At Brian_Tallarico. That's BRIAN_TALLERICO.
You know, you could just buy the URL and point it at your Twitter, man.
Oh, I should. I know.
Can help.
Okay, help.
Okay.
Nice. So Brian is sitting in on this entire Jaw. He has his top 10 films of 2013. Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Redbox Instant, Ryan.
Oh, Redbox Instant.
Yeah, you know what? This is probably one of the best offers out there right now. You can not only get unlimited streaming for your home, but you can supplement that with free rentals at their kiosks, which are ubiquitous. They're everywhere.
They give you 4 credits every single month, all that for $8. And the best part is you can try their service out for a month free. Go to cinemajaw.com. You will see an ad for their service. Click on it. You get a free month, and you help Cinemajaw out as well.
Yes, and we thank them for their support. And I got to say, it's really worth it for the discs alone.
I agree. Four new releases at their kiosks, which you don't get with Netflix. So,
yep.
Awesome. Matt, eye for an eye this week. 47 Ronin. A band of samurai set out to avenge the death and dishonor of their master at the hands of a ruthless shogun. The visually striking film stars Keanu Reeves and is directed by Carl Reinsch, who is making his feature film debut with this one. Matt, interested or ignore on 47 Ronin?
Interested. I think the trailer looks beautiful. Keanu Reeves is... It's always a little silly, but I kind of still hold him as a hero, from his Neo days, and it just looks fun. It looks like a fun kung fu movie throwback that I think he can pull off really well. So,
Brian, interest or ignore on 47 Ronin?
Ignore. I like the sound effects. I can count on one hand the number of movies they didn't screen for critics that ended up being worth my time, and it's not screening.
Oof.
And I usually do try and go see them, and sometimes I'll pay on Friday to see it and review it because those reviews are highly trafficked because not many people did them. So I have a long history of those Friday movies didn't screen for critics going to see them. I'm trying to think of one that didn't screen for critics that was actually good. It's very, very rare.
So that's an indicator, you think?
That's an indicator that they're trying to hide something.
I am so on the fence about this because I got to agree with Matt. When you see the trailer,
it's not bad.
It looks like, whoa, this has such potential.
Right.
And maybe it's not going to be great. I actually got to say, believe it or not, Matt, I'm giving it a slight interest.
Oh, wow. I hope maybe it bucks the trend. Maybe it's great.
Maybe. If it had somebody else in it and not Keanu Reeves, I'd even have more hope for it. But it being a Keanu Reeves fan and now hearing that it didn't even screen for the Chicago film critics.
And nationwide. New York, LA, no one's seen it.
Oh, wow. Now
I don't
hesitant.
Know anyone that's seen it. Now, okay, I'll play devil's advocate for a second. I don't know what studio it is, but let's say it's probably a major one. Probably Warner Brothers or something. They're busy with Oscar campaigns. They're busy with Golden Globes. Maybe they just didn't want to bother because they figured critics are busy this time of year with Oscar fair,
right,
quote unquote. So that would be the devil's advocate argument as to why they didn't show it. Whereas, in fact, it's probably just because it's horrible.
This is interesting.
Two interesteds. One was very slight on my end. One heavy ignore from Brian Tallarico for 47 Ronin. Speaking of new movies, Matt, I got out and caught August, Osage County.
Soon you'll be gone, never to return.
Don't start, Laura.
Your father, you broke his heart when you moved away.
That is wildly unfair.
You were Beverly's favorite, you know that.
I prefer to think my parents loved their children equally.
I'm sure you prefer to think that Santa Claus brought you presents, too.
This large ensemble piece is based on the Tony-winning and Pulitzer Prize-winning play written by Tracy Letts that started right here in Chicago at Steppenwolf Theater. The story centers on the Weston family who come together at their childhood home in Oklahoma when news breaks that their father has gone missing. This is one crazy family, Matt, and when they get together, more secrets from their past emerge. Playing the monarch of the family is Meryl Streep. Her 3 daughters are played by Julia Roberts, Julianne Nicholson, and Juliette Lewis. While the 3 daughters all seem to have intimacy issues, they could not be in more different places in their lives. Margot Martindale plays Streep's sister, and Chris Cooper, her husband. Now, complicating things is the fact that Streep's character is popping all kinds of pills, painkillers especially, because she is suffering from mouth cancer. The highlight of Osage County, even trumping some of the strong acting performances, is the excellent writing. Each character is so defined, and when they come together for an epic 20-minute scene around the dining room table, all hell breaks loose. Easily one of my favorite scenes of the year. Meryl Streep, Julia Roberts, and Margot Martindale all are excellent, and I expect Oscar nominations for all 3. Take that, Tallarico. If this dark comedy does one thing for you, it will be for you to realize that your own family, Matt, isn't so bad. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, a stunning 4 Jaws. What do you think of that, Brian? I know you've seen the film as well.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I disagree with a large portion of what we said there, especially the dining room table scene, drives me crazy.
Really?
Yeah. To me, that I've been calling it August Oscar bait, because to me that scene is like they put an Oscar in the middle of the table and they all just jumped and overacted as much as they could to try to win it. Especially Streep. I love Meryl Streep. I think Meryl Streep is arguably the best actress that ever lived. She is playing to the balcony through this entire film. There's not a single subtle moment in her character, in her performance. I think Roberts and Nicholson actually do make out better than Streep. Streep, I don't buy a single beat of that performance. Not a second of it.
Oh, I loved it.
I think it's all overacting. I think, here's my problem. Did you see Killer Joe?
I did.
Bug?
Yeah, these are all Tracy Letts plays.
Right. Letts needs someone who's willing to challenge him, like Friedkin was. William Friedkin directed both those films. Someone who's willing to play with him. Someone who's willing to go with the cynicism and make it visual and make it interesting, even though those films were in relatively small spaces. John Wells, who directed August Osage County, is not up to the challenge. He puts his camera in the room and just shoots it like it's a play. And so there's no sense of authorship. There's no sense of creativity. And consequently, we're left, because they gutted so much of the play. Have you seen the...
I have seen the play. Now, did you see it at Steppenwolf?
I haven't seen it. I've read it.
Okay.
But they gutted a lot of the small beats, leaving only the big ones.
Right.
They left the big scenes. Well, so then it just becomes a series of Oscar clips to me, Rye. That's all it is. It's a series of Oscar clips and big moments and especially for a film that's supposed to be about characters and family, I don't believe it for a second.
But see, wow. But here's the thing. Now, having seen the play and seen it at Steppenwolf, it was very over the top,
sure,
much like this way. I mean, the dinner scene...
But you had
scene,
the downbeats, too.
Right.
Which are gone.
But the dinner table scene that I speak of is just as crazy on stage. And when you're seeing something that live and powerful,
sure,
in a theater, it was... When we came out of there, it was like everybody was like tingling in the lobby when it was, you know, at intermission. People were like stunned how great of a performance we were seeing. So I think, too, taking that experience and going to see the movie, I was really hoping that it would even live up to that. I didn't think the actors, I was upset, actually, that they were making it with the big stars, even though it is Meryl Streep, Julia Roberts, you know, Juliette Lewis. I love the original cast here at Steppenwolf.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, God, putting all these big names in, it's going to sort of ruin
Amy
it.
Amy Morton, right?
Amy Morton was in there. And I thought, boy, this might become the Oscar bait the way you see it is.
It did.
And I'm not saying that it isn't. But I see those characters, the way it played out in the movie, is being that, you know, huge over-the-top scenes that we expected to see. And there, I didn't have a problem
with
it.
But the humanity's lost by you losing the downbeats. If you only keep the big moments, you don't get the character and the subtlety and the shading that's in Letts' screenplay. And when you have someone like Wells, who's, I'm sorry to use the phrase, kind of a hack, kind of just a TV director, I mean, he made his bones in TV,
mm-hmm,
there's no... I'm tired...
You're giving him no credit for The Company Men?
I actually think that movie's okay, but it's a TV movie in a large way. I don't think he was up for the challenge here. I don't think he was up for Letts. I mean, I don't get the impression that Streep ever let him direct her for a beat. And that's my problem with Streep lately. Streep doesn't work with anybody challenging. I want Streep to make a Scorsese movie or a Coen movie or something.
Ooh, that would be great.
Something that challenges her. But no, she works with Wells and whoever directed The Devil Wears Prada and that Iron Lady nonsense and Nora Ephron. And it's just like, come on. She's such a great actress. She needs someone to challenge her. And from the very first scene of August, when her wig's off and she's, mm-hmm, all medicated out, I was like, oh, God. And I checked out immediately.
Oh, see, that's no good. And the other thing I was talking about was how well the characters are written, that by the time they get to that dinner scene, you can just feel how it's going to play out.
But that's a good 40 minutes in. It's not a long ways.
I know, but already by that point, you feel like, oh, my God, this group of people that we've just met are going to be at this dinner scene. It's going to be hysterical.
And
I think that's what leads to it. I know, but I like that.
It's a movie that tells, doesn't show. It's a movie that says, here's our crazy characters, and they're crazy. And don't forget they're crazy and how they're crazy around a dinner table. And I hope we all win Oscars. It's just like, it's a movie, the whole show don't tell. Wells doesn't know how to show don't tell.
So do you think Meryl Streep is going to get an Oscar nomination?
She will.
And Julie
Roberts probably, and Roberts is good.
Yeah.
And Roberts' character arc is more maintained than some of the other characters, if you remember the play.
Right.
I think she kind of comes through okay. And Nicholson is quite good. And Martindale. I love Martindale.
I love Martindale also.
So there's good performances in there. So it didn't make my bottom 20 of the year.
It's
let's
just
not exaggerate.
Streep, really.
Wow.
That pissed you off.
No, it's the overall tone of the thing, which really, to me, more than any movie this year, feels like Oscar bait. It feels like a movie that exists purely to win awards.
So once again, my...
Which it won't.
My rating, four Jaws. It's a jaw dropper. August Osage County. How many Jaws, Brian, on a scale of 1 to 4?
1.5.
Ooh, boy.
Boy, tough crowd. Four Jaws.
You know, I respect that because I can't stand when they make a film for the sake of being artsy and they make it... with the intention of winning awards. I hate that.
Here's something I've said over and over again. Just because something's great in one medium doesn't mean it's going to work in another. That dinner table scene you talk about seeing in person is going to have a different impact in a theater, in a room where you're hearing the yelling, where you're hearing the passion, than it's going to have on film. And how many great plays have we seen not make the transition? How many great books have we seen not make the transition? It happens all the time. So it's no slight on Letts, who I've met. He's a great guy. He's a genius. And it's no slight on Streep, who's the best actress that ever lived. But there's a possibility that this never should have been a movie.
I don't know. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I saw it at the Chicago International Film Fest.
Oh.
Packed theater with a lot of people that saw it. This probably played, as far as seeing it in the theater, probably played the best movie in the theater that I saw all year. Laughing, applauding, cheering. Like you wouldn't believe. And I remember coming out like... This thing's got the best picture thing wrapped up. It just had such a vibe.
Not anymore for that, but I will say, and I should be clear and play both sides here, Chicago Film Critics Association had their nominations last week, and it was nominated for Best Actress and Best Adapted Screenplay.
Ah, so some people Much over to my on chagrin. The board
yes,
agree with me. Yes. Thank you, Brian. Thank you. I feel a little bit better here.
There we go.
All right, the other movie out in theaters, Matt, is The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. This second Hobbit film from Peter Jackson steps up the action, introduces some new characters, but still comes across as bloated. Legolas reappears and comes off much more serious this time around. I guess he needs Gimli to bring out his charisma. Also, the elf character of Toriel, I guess is her name, is introduced. Predictably, both these elves end up helping our group of dwarves. There are a couple of action sequences that did remind me of the fun adventure the Lord of the Rings had, such as the barrel escape scene. However, the highlight has to be, Matt, the last 30 minutes or so when our hero Bilbo Baggins comes across the dragon Smaug, voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch. I will say the dragon looked awesome on screen and was something we had not seen in The Lord of the Rings. That said, I still felt the film was too drawn out and missing the magic. With two Hobbit films down, I hate to say it, Matt, but I am not a fan of this trilogy at all. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 2.5 Jaws at best.
Brian, did you see it?
I did.
And is he right or wrong?
He's closer to right than he was the last time. But I like it more than he does. It's definitely bloated, no denying it. But a lot of that bloat actually comes in the end. He lets Cumberbatch monologue for way too long. When we need a little more tension in those moments.
And as much as I liked it, because I liked him.
The design is
amazing. Awesome,
but here's the thing. The art direction throughout the piece is spectacular. I loved Lake Town. I loved the way it looked. I loved Smaug's palace or whatever you want to call it in Lonely Mountain. And so I loved the look of the film more than the last movie, more the last Hobbit, which I thought was muddled tonally. You could tell in the last movie that Guillermo del Toro had shot half of it and then had to give up. Like you could tell a sense of authorship problems, and you could tell that it was all prologue the last time. So at least now we're in the meat of the story more.
Right.
And I felt the pacing was tighter. I didn't mind Toriel. I actually think Evangeline Lilly does a good job.
She did.
I think she's
good.
Engaging. I think Luke Evans as the bargeman is engaging.
She actually looked great as an elf.
Oh my God.
Yeah totally.
No doubt. And so we have new characters finally who are interesting. It's not just Martin Freeman listening to elf songs or dwarf songs for an hour. So there's I feel like the world is expanding finally in ways it didn't in Unexpected Journey. We're getting new characters. We're getting new ideas. We're getting that river sequence. If you're under 15, the movies we're seeing just for that.
Right. I mean,
that scene is
kids
amazing.
Kids are going to love it. Absolutely.
It's one of the best action scenes of the last 10 years.
Right.
I think.
Wow.
So for those reasons alone, yeah, I mean, yes, they could cut a half an hour out of it. It could have been a tighter film, but there's enough to like about it technically and production level wise that I'd give it 3 out of 4.
So you hear it here, Matt. 2.5 Jaws for The Hobbit from Ryan the Movie Guy. 3 Jaws from Brian Tallarico on The Hobbit.
A low 3, so we're close.
Nice. Now, neither of these films, maybe August Osage County, could have come close to Brian Tallarico's worst movie of the year.
I've seen almost 300 movies. August isn't even close.
All right, good.
Man of Steel was close. But.
Nice. All right.
We are going to go head to head.
Tallarico's on my side. I love it. But I did want to go around before we get to the best of. We should cover the worst. And I'm going to ask Matt, you first. Up first.
Oh, yeah.
What was the worst movie you saw in 2013?
There were so many.
Give me the worst, Matt.
The worst or the one that disappointed me the most? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a toss-up, right?
They are.
Yeah. I guess the worst one I saw was probably G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Oh, that is down and dirty, Matthew.
Yeah, that was just a suck fest. I mean, It was craptacular. I mean, I almost enjoyed it because of how crappy it
was. That's how I felt about it. Wow. I kind of like it as a B-movie escapist piece of crap.
Yeah. That's. I mean, it's worthy for that. I mean, if I had to throw in an honorable for worst, I would say probably Gangster Squad.
Oh, that's a bad.
That
bad
was
movie.
Bad. That was bad. Just,
there was a lot of problems with that movie.
Brian, how about you? What would you pick? Single worst film you saw in 2013?
Well, we're going to get around to the Farrelly Brothers, aren't we?
Yes.
Movie 43. Movie 43 is an abomination of cinema.
Oh, it, wow.
Shouldn't be allowed to exist. Everyone involved in it, even Kate Winslet and Hugh Jackman, should be blacklisted and not allowed to work anymore.
What were they doing in that movie?
I have no idea. It's the kind of thing that you look at and you go, somebody watched dailies of this and thought this was funny. Like, somebody at some point must have been like, no, we can release this as a movie. And I can't imagine that. Let me throw out a little just because I see so many movies. The Host was horrendous. A Good Day to Die Hard is an awful.
I stayed away from that.
Awful film. And The Big Wedding, the big ensemble thing with De Niro and Sarandon, should be put in a cave and locked away.
Wow.
And never seen again.
Wow. Those are some bad ones right there. Yeah. And I stayed away from all of them. I feel good so far. For me, this might come off as a shocker. Brian might have this in his top 10 of the year.
Uh-oh.
Just caught it on Netflix. Was dying to see it. So excited.
Oh, no.
Put on this Ryan Gosling film. And, oh, did I hate it. Only God Forgives.
I don't think you're alone on that.
No,
a lot of people are.
There are some people that are going to sit there and try to defend this film because
very few.
They love this director. His name is
Nicholas Winding Refn.
Refn, yes. And they love it. But I swear, I watched this movie. It was a contest to see who could walk the slowest with the least amount of emotion. What are they doing? Get up and walk. They were like walking in slow motion. I couldn't stand this movie.
I'm a part of the CriticWire survey on IndieWire.com, and they do a survey every week. And a couple weeks ago, it was what was the biggest disappointment of 2013, and that was my pick.
There it is.
So, and I said in that piece that it almost made you rethink Drive. Like, maybe Drive wasn't that good, because this is so bad. Like, if this is so bad, maybe Drive wasn't really
and
that
you
good.
Know what's funny is I have Bronson, which also this director
great.
Did. Now, I have not seen
Bronson's
it, and I've had
good.
It on my queue, and I was planning a back-to-back, and this
Bronson's
movie was
a much
so bad,
better film.
I thought, I need a couple of days here before
that's
I
fine.
Get back with
it. But see Bronson just for Hardy, because Tom Hardy
right.
is spectacular.
Awesome.
Only
awesome.
God Forgives is a waste of time.
Good, good. I'm glad Brian's back on my side here, and we're agreeing on some things. We threw this out onto Twitter, Matt. What did the Jawhead say for some of their worst films? Did we get some response?
We did, yeah. Let's see. Mark Herney said, I hate to hate on kids flicks, but hated Despicable Me 2. Was ready to leave after 10 minutes. Give me the Croods. Whoa.
I have not seen Despicable Me 2, and I really want to see.
I've seen both films a lot. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Yeah, ditto. I saw both films in the theater, and I have to say that Croods was a piece of, I'm just going to go ahead and say a piece of shit. And Despicable Me 2 is actually a pretty damn good sequel, as sequels go.
Both of those are extreme reactions. they're both serviceable pieces of child animation, as far as I'm concerned. They're no Frozen. They're no. I've got an animated film in my top 10, so we'll save that for a second. But Despicable Me 2 is not. It's not worse than Turbo or Planes. They're worse animated films this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Turbo and Planes are both worse.
Planes, most definitely.
Planes is bottom five consideration.
Actually, kind of. I didn't mind Turbo. Anyway, let's see. Bubba Wheat said, close between The Host and
The Host.
Captain Battle Legacy War. The Host was laughably bad romance. Battle was just low-budget bad.
I don't even know what that is.
I haven't
heard
of it.
I do this for a living. The Host is horrendous.
Oh, stay away.
The worst of the Twilight spinoff type movies.
Let's see, Al Zubair, I hope I'm saying it right, who his real name is Alex Medley, said, you're next, because I had to review it, and that alone was almost as hard as watching it.
Boo.
Terrible?
Your next is good. No, that. Boo
really?
To the tweet.
Wow.
Your next is a darn good little horror film.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like good home invasion.
I've never heard anyone not like Your Next.
Wow.
So that guy's alone.
All right, let's see. The Narrator, who is at TheNarrator26 on Twitter, said, The Host was the worst for me. Failed on all accounts.
We have consensus.
It's coming up a lot here.
Glad there's not going to be a sequel, he says. Sparky Parker, who is _ mildly amusing, said, Grudge Match takes a streaming turd on the legacy of Raging Bull.
That happened a long time ago.
Why did they make that movie?
That happened a long time ago.
Why did they make that movie? Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. It was a steaming turd. I got streaming movies on my mind.
It just looked ridiculous. Oh, man.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Let's see. Sebastian Nebel said, Hangover 3, because Hangover 3.
That's a good tweet.
Well said right
Pretty
there.
Pretty much that sums it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Last but not least, James Cust says, I was very disappointed in The Kings of Summer. The protagonist is a jerk who never faces consequences for his actions.
Chicago Critics Film Festival movie there from last year.
I was a little disappointed with it. I was.
I didn't program it. I won't take credit for that one.
I was excited because I think I had caught the trailer right before I saw a screening of it. And it was like, the trailer was like, ooh, this looks interesting. Yeah. I saw the screening like 5 days later and I was like, ah.
Yeah. That was actually one of the first films we got for the festival. And I was like, oh, that could be interesting. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, man. Because I can't choose everything for the festival. Mm-hmm. I'm a part of a group that chooses, so I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I didn't pick that one.
Jawheads, if you're listening to this and you have Twitter pulled up, and we did not mention the biggest turd of 2013, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. Now, on to the best of 2013, Matt. And as we have been gloating, it was a glorious year for film.
It was.
Since we're going long, what we'll do here is we'll go through our 10 through 6 rather quick. And then
Rapid fire.
Yeah, and then we'll go through our top 5, you know, in
Take
depth.
Take some time with
sure.
it. Gotcha.
Matt, you're getting us started. Let me hear your 10 through 6, and let me get the bell ready, and the buzzer, I should say.
You don't get to judge me.
Oh, I do, Matthew.
Then give me the buzzer when you're doing yours.
You can make noises with your mouth.
All right, Matt. So I got the buzzer ready. Here we go.
All right. My number 10, Elysium. Number 9.
Slight ding.
I liked it. It was an original piece. So definitely original.
Not if you saw District 9.
Well,
agreed.
Was a good progression.
I hated Elysium, so I'm right. giving him a slight ding.
He got a lot of flack for hating Elysium, by the way. The Wolverine, I thought was great. Number 8 was Warm Bodies, an original take on zombies. And Romeo and Juliet. Number 7, I think, was one of the best action sci-fi movies in a long, long time, Oblivion. And my number 6 was Thor, The Dark World, the best superhero movie of the year.
Well done, well done. Let me go rapid fire on my 10. I can't, can you chalk me up how many superhero films we've already had listed on your list?
Two.
Okay, we're at 2 on Matt's top 10 already. There will be no people wearing capes on my top 10.
Me neither.
At number 10. Streaming on Netflix. Haven't heard a lot of love for this film. Loved it. Europa Report. I got it as the best found footage film I have ever seen. Loved it. Number 9, Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers folk music darling. Number 8, also streaming on Netflix, Upstream Color, Shane Carruth's. He gives us the most ambitious, most out there film of the year. The first 40 minutes with the thief, quote unquote, on screen was mesmerizing. Just love that, man.
I really got to see that one.
Great, yes, you do.
Great one. That brings me to number 7 on my list, Nebraska. Alexander Payne's father-son road trip movie turns into so much more. The scene with Bruce Dern going through his old childhood home was one of my favorite of the year. Loved it. Very touching. Number 6, there it is. Oh, my. August, Osage County.
I think that's going to be Brian's number 1.
Might be.
Maybe not as good as The Play, I say, but I love a good dysfunctional family film, and when the writing is good as it is here, it's a true treat. That is my 10 through 6. We throw it over to Brian. Let's hear him.
My number 10 is Nebraska, a movie that shouldn't work. Should be condescending, cynical, looking down on these Midwestern people, but never feels that way. Totally carried by Bruce Dern's incredible performance, one of the best of the year.
No doubt.
Completely believable. My number 9 is The Wind Rises, Hayao Miyazaki's last film. The creator of Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke is retiring, and he's made a beautiful, beautiful final film that serves as an elegy to his entire career.
And is that out in theaters already? And
only New York and LA. We'll get it in February.
Okay. I hate that delay, man.
Sorry, man, but...
Damn it, I want to see that.
But we get to live in Chicago.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
My number 8 is The Wolf of Wall Street, Martin Scorsese's epic sex, drugs, and rock and roll film. It's ridiculous. It's fantastic, and I love it.
How good is DiCaprio in there? Will he get a nomination?
Best actor performance of the year, in my opinion. I picked him as the best. I don't believe he will. I think the category's too tight.
Wow.
You got Dern, Edgefor, Hanks, McConaughey, Redford. It's unbreakable. I don't think he can sneak in. I wish he could.
Yeah.
But I loved him in it. I think it's one of his best performances, and I love the film.
He's, you know what? They're going to give it to like somebody else because he's still so young. He's going to get the
Oscar. Well, he's getting screwed over every year. Like, he should have been nominated for Django. Like they keep missing him for some reason. I can't figure it out. I was talking to my wife about it. We have a theory that maybe it's like Newman. Newman didn't get recognized until Color of Money, which was way too late into his career. If you think about all the great movies he made when he was younger. Maybe, who knows, they think he's too charming.
Well, Scorsese too. He didn't win the Oscar, you know, and they gave it to him for Departed, which, you know.
Pacino. Pacino didn't get it till Son of a Woman, which is the most ridiculous thing in the history of the Oscars.
Then
the man who made The Godfather and Dog Day Afternoon has an Oscar for Son of a Woman.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, enough of that.
We're
sidetracking here. My number seven is Upstream Color. Shane Crute's fantastic.
Nice. Glad to see it's on your list
film.
As well.
And my number six is The Act of Killing, a fantastic documentary from Joshua Oppenheimer about Indonesian death squads recreating their crimes on film. It's mesmerizing.
Oh,
it's terrifying. And it is just devastating.
Also, out in Chicago yet?
Came and went. Played Music Box for a few weeks. DVD, Blu-ray, January.
Okay.
January.
Because it always pops up on people's lists. So then I start looking for it, and I'm like, I don't know.
That was the Chicago Film Critics Association's winner for Best Documentary and Best Foreign Language Film.
Nice.
It's a foreign film.
Yeah. Nice. Strong picks already, Matt, and now we're into our top five. You're up at number five, Matt.
All right. At number five, I have my favorite horror comedy, horror film of the year, the remake, if you can call it that, of Evil Dead. It was a...
Can't believe this made your top ten,
Brian
much less
Brian rolling
five.
His eyes? Are you rolling your
eyes?
What
do you mean? He fell off the couch. Get him back up. Can somebody help Brian over there?
I'm the biggest horror guy you know, and so it's an admirable that you put Evil Dead in the top five, but I have serious issues with that movie.
It rained blood, dude.
Which, at the end, which is great, but it took a long time to get there. It took a lot of crap dialogue and horrible characters to get to the raining blood. Everything with Jane
That's
Levy.
That's part of good horror.
Give
no,
him
it's
hell,
not.
Brian.
It's
Give
not
him
part.
Hell.
It's not part of Dead by Dawn. It's not part of the legacy that this movie comes from.
You know what, though? It was so much more aggressive than Evil Dead 2. I loved the brutality of it.
Yeah.
You know?
So did I. I hated the talk about drug addiction and I miss my dead mom and the acting was horrendous. Like, they should all go apologize to Campbell.
Come on now. He's no Laurence Olivier himself.
He is compared to these schmucks, except for Levy. Jane Levy's fantastic, but the problem is she disappears through most of the movie and then pops up at the end for the raining blood, which is awesome.
Like, that was freaking awesome.
No, it's great. I love that stuff at the end. But, man, so I don't hate the movie, but it takes a long time to get to the good stuff for me.
All right.
We shouldn't be just me disagreeing with this pick.
It's a number five.
I can't wait to see it.
I admire that choice.
I'm so excited to see Brian put you in a headlock later, man.
No.
when you announce your number one.
No, he says he likes the choice.
I do. It's a good one.
That's what I'm taking away from that.
All right. Let me pick it up here a notch, all right? At my number five, foreign film. Could it almost be higher on my list? I'm going Blue is the Warmest Color.
It's a good movie.
And I say here, Matt, this intimate love story showcases the best acting by an actress this year, in my opinion.
Agreed.
I think she should win the award. I don't even think it's a contest. Thank you, Brian. And her name is Adele. Give me the last name.
Exarchopoulos.
Not bad.
He's been practicing.
Yeah, the three-hour runtime flew by as I was invested so heavily in the characters' lives. The last 30 minutes are heartbreaking. I love the feeling of getting lost in a movie, and I totally did with Blue is the Warmest Color. My number five of the year.
Good pick. She just won our award for Most Promising Performer.
Nice.
And she came very close to Best Actress.
I think she should...
Blanchett stole it.
She should definitely... Well, I love Kate Blanchett also, but I hope Adele gets
a nomination.
And I hope she wins.
I don't think she has a chance to win. I think Kate's got it locked up. I think her name's on the award already. But I just hope Adele gets nominated. That would be great.
That was my number five. We swing it over to Brian's.
Another movie with a great female performance, which is Short Term 12. Brie Larson stars in this little intimate film about people who run a foster home for kids caught between like alcoholic parents and abuse and stuff like that. It's a beautiful little drama that kind of really has, I think, something important and interesting to say about the way people heal and deal with pain, that it doesn't have to be major therapy or big moments. It can be little things, and that there are ways to, through relationships, find peace. And I think it's a great film.
I've seen it, and it may come up on somebody else's list in a little while.
Okay.
Great pick, Brian. Love the way this guy thinks. We are into our fours. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
All right, guys. Here it is. I'm just going to get this out of the way.
Don't do it, Matt. Don't do it. Don't make an ass out of yourself here.
Man of Steel.
Oh!
No, absolutely not. This is the... Okay. It's really the great... hope of Warner Brothers Studios. If they have a chance in hell of doing what Disney Marvel has done, creating a cinematic universe, this movie needed to work, It did work. It delivered. It gave us a more aggressive, darker Superman. I thought Henry Cavill was great in the Superman role. They really brought out the alien of, you know, in Superman. He's always been so cheerful and primary color and let me help you with that, like a Boy Scout. No, this guy's isolated. He's an alien. They did it right. It was the greatest Superman movie, I think, since the first Superman movie.
I was bored by the action sequences. I thought the movie, the plot was just terrible as far as moving the direction of the movie around. They constantly had to explain what was going to happen next because it was just like, I've used the example of that whole contraption Zod used at the end, came out of absolute nowhere, how they were going to go on two sides of the planet. It was like,
well, I'll give you
shoot
this.
Me in the head. This right. movie is just terrible.
I'll give you this.
Goyer must be stopped.
It was no Avengers.
Of course not. Okay, before we stop, continue to make fun of superhero movies. Avengers is a great, 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 great film. It's no Avengers.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I agree.
We agree with that on that.
Yes, but
Man of Steel is a heartless, cold, lacking in humanity piece of crap.
I think that was intentional.
Of course it was. Great, but I need man.
Not the piece of crap
I need
part.
Man in my Superman. I need man in my Superman. I need humanity in my Superman. I'm not watching a
He's
video
not
game.
Human.
I right. play enough video games. I don't need to watch one in a movie theater. It is a CGI orgy that it leaves me cold, and I don't care about any of it.
Another problem I had with the film
I
that I always bring up with Matt is there was
right.
nobody ever in peril where I cared about, like Lois Lane being in danger or his
no
mom.
No character investment.
Nothing.
You brought up Avengers. You're invested in the characters
there.
In Avengers.
You sit
you care
there and
about
watch
what happens
superhero
to them.
Versus superhero, and I was yawning in the theater.
Yeah, you care guys, about the characters in Spider-Man 2. You care about the characters in Singer's X-Men movies.
You care about his parents, his relationship with
Costner running into a tornado. You cared what happened there? I didn't give a shit.
Well, stay away,
we're
son.
We're gonna agree to disagree here, guys. And I'm not alone. He got a lot of crap.
No, I know.
And I love how he's waving him away. There's this tornado hitting, and yeah. they're only about 20 feet away from him. They're standing
him,
there.
He wants to give his son a normal life. He doesn't want him to expose
I know,
himself.
But wouldn't the people at least run away? They wouldn't stand 20 feet away, and the tornado is going to get him. And
I'll
not
defend.
Them.
I'll defend for a second. Shannon is one of our best living actors. I think Costner is incredibly well cast. I like Lane. I even like Adams. I got no problems with a lot of what's happening on screen. I think Zack Snyder is a hack. I don't think he knows how to make movies. I haven't liked a movie. I think his best movie features talking owls. I haven't liked really anything Whoa. He's made. Yeah.
Whoa, dude.
I went there.
All right. Well, that's a conversation for another podcast.
All right.
Hold on. It's nice going after Matt here because I can pick up the show
pretty
easily.
I'm an easy target on this show right now.
At number four, I class it up here. It could be anybody's number one. I go with Steve McQueen's beautiful 12 Years a Slave.
Nice pick.
Yeah, it gives us a pain. Steve McQueen gives us a painful movie that looks at slavery right in its ugly face like we've never seen before. Chiwetel Ejiofor, phenomenal. More than likely will win the Academy Award and deserving.
Like
he's just awesome.
Unless they want to give it to Dierna Radford for Lifetime Achievement, which is possible.
And I love the whole supporting cast, too. Fassbender, Giamatti, Paul Dano, and even the actress.
She's going to win. Lupita Nyong'o's going to win.
She's awesome.
You can sketch that on the
She's
Oscar
awesome.
Right now.
And so, I remember that scene I highlighted in my review when I reviewed it here on The Jaw of Chiwetel Ejiofor's character just hanging from the tree, and McQueen lets that shot just sit there, and the pain you feel in the theater, it's just stirred in you. It was awesome.
What I love about that scene, love being a strange word, but what's so amazing about that scene to me is the
right.
slaves in the background going about their daily business, because it starts off with just him, and then you see people leaving their house, their homes or their sheds or whatever you want to call them, and going to go to work in the fields and stuff, because life had to go on. That's what 12 Years a Slave gets for me. It's that this was routine. This horror was routine. I have some more issues with it than most people. It's not going to be in my top four. I think it's a very good movie. I think it's just short of greatness. I sense a little bit of McQueen's thumbprints on it too often. Like, it's almost too artistic at times when I want it to be more relentlessly realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the low angles of him being whipped for longer than we've ever seen. I don't like the fact that I can feel the director in that moment.
Sure.
I want to just be engaged in that moment.
Good point.
So then that's my only issue with it. But it's a minor issue. It's going to win Best Picture, I think. My number four might steal it, which is Gravity.
Nice.
Gravity is my number four, and that's its closest competition. Alfonso Cuarón did something that I think is getting harder and harder to do for generations as we get older, which is to find wonder in cinema again. When we were kids, you saw things that you'd never seen in a movie before every weekend. Nowadays, kids have seen everything. They've seen it on TV. They get CGI 3D animated TV shows. Not 3D, but CGI animated. We didn't... we watched Saturday morning cartoons and went and saw Tim Burton's Batman, and it was like a whole other world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that kind of sense of wonder is gone from a lot of cinema nowadays.
Agree.
And Gravity brings it back.
With a punch.
Gravity is a technical masterpiece, and Bullock is fantastic in it. I don't care what anybody says. She grounds the piece in a believable, realistic character who you go with, and you don't just watch her passively. The thing, I've seen Gravity 3 times now, and the amazing thing is the response it creates in you, even those of us who see movies all the time, in that you forget that it's not real. You go with the tension of it, which as someone who sees 300 movies a year, it's unbelievable to me. I can still have that reaction on the third viewing.
That's great.
And it's the kind of movie that I think I'll have that reaction on the 30th viewing.
Yeah. And I was wondering, too, because I've only seen this on the big screen.
Plays at home.
I was going to ask you how it played at home, because you've seen a screener of it. It plays pretty well.
My wife and I watched it the other night, and I couldn't believe that it played well.
Nice.
For me, I agree with you. A technical masterpiece, visually unprecedented. I think they absolutely raised the bars, you know, what you can do on the screen with the camera movements and that sort of thing. Story was just not there for me. It just wasn't there. It didn't have enough story for it to make my top 10.
Hey, somebody else might be talking about it here. We are into our threes, though. We are into our threes. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
Well, it's no Gravity, guys.
Boy, was there another superhero movie? But, am I missing, Brian?
No. This one.
Is there a Green Lantern sequel this year?
Oh, come on. Give me a little credit, man. Just because I like superhero movies doesn't mean I like that piece of
Whoa.
Shit. All right, but this one does take place in space, gentlemen. It has a little something to do with gravity.
Oh,
I'm talking about Star Trek Into Darkness.
Probably give you that. Honorable mention here.
One of the best action movies of all time. It advanced the Star Trek franchise because, okay, the first film was fine, but really this one needed to be successful, and it delivered. Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan. Spoiler alert, I guess. I don't know. At this point,
that was a mistake. That was a mistake on Abrams' part to keep that quiet because it created such a weird sense around the spoiler. I think he should have let people know that's who he was playing.
Yeah,
I
guess.
It would have created less letdown for a lot of hardcore fans.
Yeah, and it wasn't that big of a reveal when he was like,
it was silly. Well, we all knew it.
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure. But oh my God, his performance was fantastic.
He's very good.
And that action sequence, the space dive with him and Kirk with Chris Pine. Good Lord.
It was awesome.
What a...
I saw that in 3D, and that was great. It was great. Great sequence.
I think with probably the best 3D movie of the year.
No. Gravity. Hands down, Gravity.
Gravity
might be the best 3D movie ever.
I agree.
All right.
We are still our threes, and at number
three... Better story, though, with the Star Trek.
Who would think I would have...
More story, not necessarily better.
Who would think I would have a part 3 on my top 10 list, Matt?
Hangover.
But boy, I do hear... And who would think that part 3 would be about a couple walking streets of various cities and falling in love? I am speaking of Before Midnight. Of course, this is Julie Delpy, Ethan Hawke as Jesse and Celine. I was a huge fan of the first two films. It's always exciting when they're going to put out a third film, and I'm hoping that they do a fourth and this keeps continuing on. But this is probably the most honest of the three. It deals with the most probably... real issues that couples deal with. It felt real, but at the same time, you're sitting there watching it and you just want more of this conversation. I can't believe how relatable the characters are and how easy you fall into it for two characters walking around just talking to be on my top 10 list. And I think all of the films, well, at least the last one as well, landed on my top 10. Mm. I love these films.
I'll talk about it later.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
even
geez.
Higher on Brian's list.
Hello.
My number three is Spike Jonze's Her.
Ooh.
It's amazing. Actually, to be honest, I said in my best of the piece on Hollywood Chicago that my 4 through 1 are very interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
In a couple years, they might change a little bit. I love Her as much as I love my top 2. It's a movie with Joaquin Phoenix, plays a guy in the near future, maybe 10 to 15 years. Who falls in love with his operating system, falls in love with his Siri, essentially, voiced by Scarlett Johansson. The idea is in 10 or 15 years, your Siri will be, they call it an intuitive operating system. It listens to you, it pays attention to you, it changes with you and learns with you and talks with you. And it's about, the description pins it as this weird little sci-fi thing and people will dismiss it too easily. It's about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what we take away from relationships, how we can be intellectually engaged and emotionally engaged, even if we're not physically. If there's a physical couple who's been together for years but aren't feeling with each other or talking to each other or engaging with each other, but they're together physically, are they more real than this relationship that is so intellectually sparking. It's a brilliant concept.
And
Phoenix nails it. The supporting cast is Scarlett Johansson, gives the best vocal performance in the history of vocal performances.
Wow.
She's spectacular. And then you've got Rooney Mara and Amy Adams in supporting roles, too.
And you couldn't ask for a better director, Spike Jones, to direct this kind of material.
He is fantastic, and it's the first one that he's written completely from scratch, because Where the Wild Things Are was an adaptation,
right.
And it feels deeply personal to me, because he dated Sofia Coppola for a long, and they were married. He was married to Sofia Coppola, and they got divorced, and in this film, he was, in the movie, Rooney Mara plays a filmmaker, they're going through a divorce, and there's this whole, like, sense that this is how he dealt with lost love, and it's just... I love everything about it. I can't get enough of it.
I do want to let the Jawheads know, I have not seen her,
right.
Or I would expect it to be on my top 10. I've been highly anticipating this film.
Yeah.
And I believe the score is done by Arcade Fire.
Arcade Fire just won the Chicago Film Critics Association Award for Best Score, which is fantastic.
Line and it me
won
up, best, it you won know
best,
what I mean?
It won Best Original Screenplay for the Chicago Film Critics Association as well.
Nice pick.
I love it. I love Jones stuff in general. Where the Wild Things Are was my number one, believe it or not. I love that movie.
Oh. So. I'm a fan as well. We are into our twos, Matt. What do you got sitting there?
At number two, I got Frozen.
I knew it was going to be high on your list, Matthew.
This is, and I can't remember if we were talking about this on the air or off, but this is the best Disney film in the last 20 years. I mean, you said Lion King.
Yeah.
I would agree. I think I, in fact, tweeted that exact thing. This is the best Disney film since The Lion King. Instant classic. And talk about shoo-ins for Oscars. I think that song, Let It Go.
Let It Go.
Absolutely going to win. There's pretty much no contest.
I think it's a major turning point, that song, for Disney female characters. The whole concept of the film was built around that centerpiece song. When I saw the film at a screening audience, the audience applauded at the end of that song.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that a great feeling? Isn't that great
feeling? To a musical number. I think it likely wins animated feature, too. I mean, unless the Miyazaki gets some fans. But generally, the Academy lately has gone Disney, Pixar. And there's no contest in terms of...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely no contest.
No, it's a great film.
It's an amazing film, and I like what we were talking a little bit about, how it breaks the mold of... there's a big female empowerment thing, especially with the way they choose to do the ending.
Yeah.
I certainly don't want to spoil this for anybody, because it's worth seeing. It's still in theaters, so get out there while you can and check out Frozen.
It's nice. A great entertaining film. I think it's an important film for little girls. I think especially if you have little girls, take them to see this, because it's about embracing what's different about you, whereas little girls are often told they need to be like boys.
Nope.
You need to be a warrior like Brave, or you need to be X, Y, and Z, whereas Frozen is about be what you are.
No wonder Matt liked it so much.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. swings it over to my number two, and this is where Gravity sits for me.
Mm.
And we were commenting about how great the 3D is. I have it as the best 3D since The Life of Pi, which I thought was a masterpiece in 3D. And I remember when I saw Gravity, I thought the previews, I thought, what, Sandra Bullock's going to be lost in space? It's so much more than that. The symbolism of rebirth, everything about it was just beautiful. I remember, like, at the end, like, having, like, tears coming down my eye, didn't know why. It was just, like, my body was going through this emotional experience. The music took over. I just loved it. I just ate it up. I thought, visually, like you had said, Brian, a reason to go out to the theater and a reason to tell people you have to see this in the theater.
Yep.
Don't wait for home theater. And that's what it's all about sometimes, the magic of movie. And I haven't seen that magic in a long time. Gravity, my number two. Brian?
A tonal masterpiece, a movie that should not work in any way, shape, or form, but does, and that's Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen brothers' fantastic period comedy, dramedy, musical, folk adventure, whatever you want to call it, that is just perfect. I love it. I think it's their best film since Fargo. Yes, that includes No Country for Old Men.
I think
it is...
Strong words here, Brian.
I've watched it 3 times. I love it. It's like a folk album. The songs come back to me. The beats between the songs, which are really liner notes for the music, because the music is saying more about his character than the plot is. When you see it again, you need to see it again. It just gets richer and deeper. Every time I see it, I will watch it repeatedly. I want to hug it and take it home with me.
And you know, we've been talking about great scenes in movies, and there is a couple of great ones inside Llewyn Davis.
Right.
And one of them being when he finally meets the producer in Chicago and plays that song. It's like, it's heartbreaking.
It's just beautiful.
Which
if you read I don't want to spoil anything here. We'll talk off mic about why he sings that song. I have a theory now that makes it even deeper and better. I mean, it's not spoiling anything to say he plays a song that he really shouldn't play when he's trying to impress somebody.
Yeah.
but he plays it because he wants it and because it's what he's feeling at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because thematically, it's about what's going on in his life. It's just, it's such a great, great movie.
Wow. Number two.
Those guys are absolute masters.
We are into our ones, Matt. These are the jaw droppers. What do you got sitting as your number one movie of 2013?
Spring Break.
Look at my shit.
Wow.
Spring Breakers.
Total shocker, Matt. But I'll give it to you because you know what? You've been promoting this movie a lot. When you saw it, I forgot how much you love this film.
It's the best movie in your top 10, so I'm shocked. I love it, too.
Well, thanks. Easily, handily, the best movie I saw all year, bar none.
It's a good pick.
It's an absolute freaking masterpiece. Visually, the storytelling in it was fantastic. I love the little... It's almost like somebody with a short-term memory problem, how it kind of turns itself... Almost like what they did in Memento, but understated. It's... How it shows a little bit of what's going to happen, and then it happens.
Right. Yeah. Foreshadowing, sort of.
Yes.
Visual foreshadowing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so great. I mean, there's
Franco,
so much...
all about Franco. My pick for Best Supporting Actor, I voted for him in the Chicago Film Critics Association. If I had an Oscar ballot, I'd vote for him. In 100 years, Alien from Spring Breakers is a character that people are still going to remember and still going to be going, look at my shit.
Look at my shit. Spring Break.
I know. Bright. I know me and Jen, who saw it months ago, we still say Spring Break.
I walk in and go, look at my shit, whenever I get stuff in the mail. And
when he shows up, that is such a turning point for that movie.
Oh, it's huge.
Just a great movie. I'm in love with it. And it perfectly captures a moment. Like, and not just the moment in everybody's life, but the moment we are at right now with the millennial generation and people that are at that age, the music, the dubstep music, the everything. It just, we're going to be looking back at this as a period piece in like 30 years.
It's the theme of 2013. There are two themes. There's people stranded, all is lost, gravity, Captain Phillips. And then there's Look at My Shit, which is Wolf of Wall Street, Pain and Gain, Spring Breakers. All these people... The era we're in now, maybe it's the millennial thing where we're grabbing everything we can, we're effing it, we're snorting it, and we're doing whatever we want, and we're living in the moment,
right?
Which could be a response to any number of things. I don't want to get too deep here. It could be a response to recession. It could be, I'm going to enjoy this while I have it. I'm going to enjoy my spring break. I'm going to go with Alien, even though I know it's risky, and I'm going to sing Britney Spears songs while I hold shotguns in a bikini, because that's what I want to do today. I don't care about tomorrow.
So awesome.
Nice pick at number one, Matt. You surprised me. My number one, Brian mentioned it earlier. I thought he had it a little bit too low. Small movie. Not enough people have seen it. I just adored this little film. Short Term 12, my number one pick for 2013. And it would have been an accomplishment enough to give us a well-told drama about these trouble and neglected kids. But to then tie in the counselors' lives and show us the reason why they're drawn to working with the kids turned it into a masterpiece.
I agree.
And Brie Larson was excellent in there. Mm-hmm. And there's such heartbreaking scenes in this movie with the troubled kids. I forget the young rapper.
Keith Stanfield is the actor's name, but I don't know. Marcus.
Marcus, yes. Marcus, just excellent.
When
they go to cut his hair.
He's great.
And it's just heartbreaking. And I remember reviewing this on The Jaw here, Matt, and I talk about how the film is bookended with two stories. Mm-hmm. And the first story, both of them are hilarious, and they're so well told. But the first one's funny, but then is this sad story, and the last one is also very funny and is actually uplifting.
Yeah.
And that sums up the movie. It's sad, it's funny, it's uplifting. Ultimately, I loved Short Term 12, but I wish it would get more attention.
But it's gradual, it's close to the same story. It's about something happening outside of the facility and its perception of what's happening out. That's a great insight on your part that those stories bookend the film, but they show what I was talking about, which is that change is gradual, it's not going to happen instantly. Like,
right.
Grace, I love, not to spoil anything for people who haven't seen it, and you all should see it. I love that it's not like okay, everything's great, we're going to walk off into the sunset together movie.
Right.
Like, you get the impression Grace is going to go through some shit. And then they're all
right.
going to go through some shit, because that's the way change happens gradually.
Yeah. It's such a great movie.
It
and it just didn't play enough. And I hate how some films, they do catch that buzz and smaller movies get seen by more people. Short Term 12, it's
just Chicago Film Critics Association winner for Most Promising Filmmaker, beat Joshua Oppenheimer for Act of Killing, beat Ryan Coogler for Fruitvale Station.
There we go.
And Brie Larson nominated for Best Actress by us.
Which I would love to see.
I will forgive the Academy for a lot if they nominate Brie Larson.
Yes, I agree. I agree. When I saw it, I walked out of the theater, I said it was my favorite performance up until I had saw Blue is the Warmest Color.
Those are the top two.
Those are the top two. That was my number one. That leaves us with Brian Talrico's pick for the best movie of 2013. Hit it.
I saw it in January in Park City and nothing topped it, and that's Before Midnight. I think Before Midnight is a perfect, perfect film. It is a, like you said, you covered it very well, in that it's about how, what we don't see in film is how the impact of love. At the end of Before Sunrise, or Before Sunset. There's this great, wonderful, romantic moment. And I remember a whole generation was like, oh, that's such a beautiful moment.
He didn't
get on the plane. This movie opens with, well, shit happened because he didn't get on that plane.
Right.
He got divorced. He doesn't see his kid anymore. And to see a filmmaker and filmmakers, because all three of them basically made it together, dissect how people change over time, how love changes over time. And then the fight. The fight is the best, one of the best scenes in the last 10 years. It is so real. It is so true. It is so pure. It is about how people can say horrible things to each other. I don't love you anymore. I don't want to be with you. But they don't mean it. And even if they do, they only mean it in that moment.
Right.
And films don't capture that. Fights in films are always just excuses to get to the climax where they make up. They're always just part of the stupid romantic comedy you're watching. To watch a romantic drama that gets how people actually live in married life, few have done it better.
I agree.
And it's such a long game, too, because they've been building this thing for decades, right?
And this is now 18 years in the making. 9, then 9 again.
Yeah.
So 18 years, you're talking, we've known these characters.
Right.
And
Talk about a slow burn.
It's almost like you're not watching a movie. I almost relate it closer to going to the theater and experiencing something right in front of you, because you just really feel like these people aren't acting.
And Linklater does not get enough credit for his direction in this film, because in that fight, he so often puts the camera in the corner of the hotel room and doesn't move it.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch them move around, and it's like you're eavesdropping.
Right.
It's like, I shouldn't be here. There are moments where they say things to each other where I was like, I should leave the room.
Yes.
Like, if you saw a couple actually fighting like that, you'd be like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
It's an amazingly powerful film.
These are some great number ones. Again, I had Short Term 12, Matt had Spring Breakers, and Brian had Before Midnight. Great picks. Jawheads. If we missed your number one of 2013 and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. We ran long. When we come back, we got a cinema war looking at the best siblings outside of the Coens when it comes to directing, plus yourself, Matt, versus Brian in 2013 movie trivia. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. 12 Years a Slave's nonfiction story, based on a memoir written in 1853, was also the source for the 1984 made-for-TV movie The American Playhouse, Solomon Northup's Odyssey, which starred Avery Brooks. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Brian Talrico of HollywoodChicago.com, RogerEbert.com,
FilmThreat.com, FearNet.
You can find him anywhere you look on the internet.
You're on the radio, too.
Yeah, WGN every Saturday.
I'm glad you mentioned
AM radio, 720 noon every Saturday.
Right here in Chicago.
Yep.
And talking television still on WGN?
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Definitely check out WGN. And again, if you want to follow Brian on Twitter, he gives reviews all the time.
Yep. Brian _ Talrico, TALLERICO.
And I think I mentioned this last time you were on. I think your radio appearances is probably where I catch you the most.
Cool.
Because I'm driving around with my kid and wife doing errands on Saturday, and it's a good time to listen.
Yeah, we've got some hardcore TV fans there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, we did not throw one item into the jaw box, Matt, because we're covering 2013, and it's fresh in our heads.
Let's give him a Christmas gift.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I'm actually curious to know what Elias's favorite film of 2013 is. I mean, he's in that jaw box the whole time. Did he see anything?
My prediction, Man of Steel.
Oh, please. Well, let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
Thanks, guys, for pitying me and actually talking to me. It really is a shame when we have such a professional guest like Brian who knows everything, so there isn't any questions to throw in. Honestly, he's just so professional, knows so much that he is finally another person who agrees that Superman, Man of Steel, was a bad movie.
Nice.
So
he's, wait,
what a great guest! I just want to say,
just it doesn't make him right.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
If Elias says so, it's right.
Okay, all right.
That's honestly, the rule. Though, like I've only seen about 5 new movies this year, and because you guys barely let me or leave the
you did
job
escape
box unlocked,
a couple of times.
Exactly, yeah,
yeah.
You made a movie. I mean, that counts.
I did. 4 job reviewed by Rye, which was awesome. But the one that I am a huge fan of is The World's End.
Nice
good
pick.
Really?
Very good pick.
Especially in, you know, the trilogy, obviously. I think I didn't really like Hot Fuzz, and I think The World's End finally brought it back. Plus, you could obviously tell that Edgar Wright knew, he learned so much from making Scott Pilgrim. And he utilized those skills, but he still had the heart, and he used the story from his childhood, or just the idea from his childhood of trying to complete that actual bar tour, and I think it just wrapped it all up perfectly.
Good pick.
Just came out on Blu-ray and DVD, too, so give it a spin, Jawheads.
I love Edgar Wright. I don't love World's End as much as most people, but I still like it. Bad Edgar Wright is still damn entertaining. So that's
exactly.
And bouncing off of Elias's pick of The World's End, a couple of honorable mentions that we just came off of our favorite 2013. Brian?
I did top 13 for the site, so I might as well just spread it out there. My 11 was Stories We Tell, Sarah Polley's brilliant documentary. My 12 was Mud from Jeff Nichols, and my 13 was The Spectacular Now, and my 14 was American Hustle, which plenty of you will see soon. So
sure. Throw that I also had Mud listed. I thought it was spectacular. I'd go as far as to say A Place Beyond the Pines.
That was my 15.
I love that film.
There we go. This is creepy.
I love that film, and I thought there's a Ryan Gosling film, unlike Only God Forgives, where I was totally involved.
Films of the year.
Yeah, and it came out very early. I want to say like February or March somewhere. Yeah. It was way early. Loved it. And also Star Trek Into Darkness. I had that as listed as an honorable as well. Matt?
If I had to throw one more out there, which I think is this pick is true to character, Pacific Rim, Del Toro's latest movie, I think was a little ignored because, hey, it's giant robots fighting giant monsters. But it was actually really well made, visually stunning, and I love the acting in it. It was actually a really good, you know, escapism sort of action giant kaiju monsters thing. It was fun.
I still gotta check that out.
So with you on Pacific Rim. Hey, it's giant robots fighting giant monsters.
Yeah,
is how you say that.
Yeah.
No, it's. I think my review opened with boom, boom, pow, pow, boom, boom, which is what you want from that kind of movie. It's
absolutely.
It satisfies. It's Pauline Kael. I hate to get all wonky here, but Pauline Kael said, you judge a movie based on its intentions. Like, what did it? Is it a comedy? Did it make you laugh? If it's a giant monster, giant robot movie, does it work on a boom, boom, pow, pow blockbuster scale? And that movie works.
I thought it worked.
There you go.
Well.
I don't accept any argument otherwise.
See,
that movie
works. Tellerico can agree with you when you have a good pick, Matt.
Yeah.
There we go.
Like Man of Steel. It's fantastic.
Elias, anything else to add as we close out 2013?
No, that's it. Honestly, that's it.
Well, enjoy the New Year's in the Jawbox.
Thank you very much.
Get back in there.
I need some more water.
Here's a noisemaker and some confetti for New Year's. Happy New Year's, buddy.
Matt, I can't eat this confetti. Thanks, though. Please.
Yeah, it's just, seriously. You know, tie in starch.
All right.
Before we get to Cinema War, Matt, we did catch a couple of documentaries on Netflix we wanted to call attention to for the Jawheads at home that want to stream something. Up first, Blackfish.
Yeah. This is the story about SeaWorld and their treatment of the orcas they have in captivity. And I think more importantly, it's sort of an expose regarding the work conditions for their trainers who are really in the tank with some pretty unpredictable and dangerous animals. I mean, obviously orcas are extremely intelligent. They're up there with, you know, dolphins. All whales are very intelligent creatures. And this movie is sad and disturbing.
I agree. And for being someone who's fortunate enough to have gone out whale watching about a year and a half ago, went out to Seattle and went out there, you know, a couple hours off the coast, and we did the whale watching, me and my girlfriend, and to see it live in nature, it was so gorgeous. And I urge everybody, if you have the chance, to do it.
Did you see the orca?
Yes, yeah. I saw the orcas coming up. They come in for their feeding, and they're coming up out of the water. Just gorgeous. I got some great video of it. And I don't say this often. It's probably the most zen-like moment of my life. Just you just get lost in the moment of watching how gorgeous it is and nature, you know, to see it. And then to watch this documentary, the way they take the whales and bring them into the parks was just heartbreaking, you know, and to hear that the whales are basically crying, making the sound that they had never made before, looking for their offspring. And,
it's
and
torture.
It is. It's just awful.
I have three kids. They won't go anywhere near SeaWorld unless they're holding a protest sign. It's just the way I feel about it, and the movie solidifies that. It's made by CNN Films. Mm-hmm. There's such crap on CNN at like 2 in the morning. If I owned CNN, I'd put it on every night. Let enough people see it until this nightmare ends. That's the way I look at that movie.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a call to arms.
The line in the movie, one of the trainers says, I think, you know, in 10 years or 15 years, whatever he says, we're going to look back and say, what a barbaric time.
Yeah, I
completely
agree. Yep, totally. Definitely check it out. I would agree. Four Jaws, would we all say?
It was my, like, 17, so there yeah, it was go. High for me. Check it was my third favorite documentary.
Check it out, Jawheads. It's streaming on Netflix and also Redbox Instant. Matt, another one that we caught?
I saw a movie that came out the year we started doing Cinema Jaw, and I'm ashamed that it took me this long to see it. Fantastic documentary, streaming now on Netflix. It's called Clean Flicks.
I have not seen this.
All right, good. So the premise of this film is it's a documentary that is looking at the clean Mormon version of movies that they were doing. It became this huge thing in Salt Lake City and the, you know, basically all of Utah.
Nice.
Where they would take movies put out, you know, by regular studios and sanitize them. Take out all the sex and violence.
And plot.
But yeah.
Sometimes.
It became this huge business. So you're watching this documentary that's, you know, ostensibly about that. But then there's a story, which so many great documentaries have this. They just kind of stumble upon a larger story. The movie takes a twist toward the end. It's like the last third of the movie that you don't see coming, and I think that twist really took it, elevated this from an interesting documentary that you could stream to a really good film. It was handled well, they told the story well, they stayed objective, and I really enjoyed this documentary, especially it's streaming. You don't have, you know, just go watch it right now.
Nice.
It's a good one. Let me throw out a few other great documentaries this year, as long as we're on the subject. There's a movie called The Gatekeepers about Shin Bet.
I did see this.
That's a great documentary that came out this year. There's a movie called After Tiller that hasn't played in a lot of markets but should probably be on DVD soon, about late-term abortion doctors, people when the babies are going to have serious birth defects and might not survive and the mother not survive, the doctors who are willing to do those procedures that late and the cost they pay. One of them was killed. It's a fascinating documentary. I saw that at Sundance. And then there's a really great documentary that I'm just going to mention now because maybe it'll get to a bigger audience, called When I Walk, about a young filmmaker who makes movies and loves life and is stricken with multiple sclerosis at the age of 25 and in a matter of a couple of years can't move, can't talk, can't really do much of anything. And he filmed his entire progression, and that's a heartbreaking, fascinating film.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really hard to find. But I throw it out there because we brought it to the film festival last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing you'll see at our film festival. I saw it at Sundance. I contacted the filmmaker. We brought it to our festival. So that's the kind of thing you'll see there, and hopefully we can get it to a bigger audience still.
Hey, that's awesome, man. That's what these podcasts are for. Get it out to the Jawheads. Right. Nice. Well done. Well done. Matt, it does bring us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Brian Tallarico, gets to play judge and jury and determine who he thinks won the Cinema War. And it's important because we are battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. With the Coen brothers' film Inside Llewyn Davis out in theaters, I remarked to Matt, boy, they're the best directing duo out there as far as siblings, you know? And Matt's like, yeah, who would you have after that? The Fairleys? And I said, no, you're missing one. The Wachowskis. Cinema War time right there. Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, after the Coen brothers, who are the best directors when it comes to sibling? The Fairley brothers or the Wachowskis? Matt, you'll be fighting for your New England's own Fairleys. Rye, you'll be fighting for your Chicago own Wachowskis. Let the Cinema War begin.
You know, that was a cheap shot writing that in for him, man. All right. Ever since the first Matrix film, the Wachowski siblings have been letting us down, with the exception of V for Vendetta, which they did not direct. And although Jupiter Ascending looks mildly interesting, the casting choices there are just abysmal. Yes, I like me some Mila Kunis in the right role, but much like the Wicked Witch, I think she is totally miscast here. And listen, screw Channing Tatum. I would rather have seen them go with unknowns with Keanu Reeves.
Matt, I could have won this if all I said for all four of my points was The Matrix. All right? But I have a lot more to add. The Wachowskis are also responsible for writing and producing V for Vendetta, like you said, not to mention their first film, Bound, which gave us the famous lesbian film between Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly. Enough said.
No, not enough said. You could have said The Matrix the whole time. I could have said Dumb and Dumber, Shallow Hal, Kingpin, There's Something About Mary. These films are almost on the same comedy shelf as Lebowski. That's four game changers to the Wachowskis' one.
Matt, sure. The two Matrix films that followed the groundbreaking original did not live up to the hype. But look at the series as a whole. It was a giant accomplishment. Very seldom can you point to one movie, or even better, one scene and say, that changed movies. You can do that with The Matrix and Bullet Time.
Yeah, but I don't think they can completely hang their hat on that. Or if they do, that's it. Meanwhile, the Farrellys have, with only a couple of missteps, produced classic after iconic classic, and will no doubt create another masterpiece in Dumb and Dumber 2. I got faith. They are masters of slapstick and screwball with true heart, and that's a rare bird. I'm way more interested in their projects.
Oh, jeez, Matt. Because of The Matrix, I'll say this. The Wachowskis are held to some of the highest standards in Hollywood. Cloud Atlas, which was based on a book many said was unfilmable, was a risky move for the siblings. Sure, the movie did not turn out to be a perfect 10, but you have to applaud the effort. Cloud Atlas was a solid movie that had unreachable expectations.
All right, here's the thing. I have nothing but respect for the Wachowskis, and I especially admire Lana for being a positive role model for the transgender people out there. But when it comes to their filmmaking, I have to put the Farrelly brothers above them. Like M. Night Shyamalan, I think the Wachowskis have spent their once tremendous potential, and while we all root for them to recapture that magic, they just keep failing, while the Farrellys have not.
How dare you, Matt? The Wachowskis and M. Night Shyamalan?
I went there.
You ass. I tell you what, though. The bottom line is this. The Wachowskis continue to take risks and push the limits of filmmaking. All the while, the Farrellys, our brothers, are making dick and fart jokes. When Hollywood says the Wachowskis failed, you have The Matrix Revolutions. When Hollywood says the Farrelly brothers failed, you have Hall Pass or The Three Stooges.
Three Stooges was good.
Sure, they're all movies, Matt, but let's be honest. They're not on the same plateau. Boy, oh boy. Buttonheads, as always, wow. On Cinemore, we throw it to our guest, our jury.
I have a few thoughts.
Our executioner, Brian, what'd you think of this Cinemore?
Matt gets points for mentioning Kingpin, although you didn't mention it enough. One of the funniest movies.
Oh, God, yeah.
If I'm on a desert island, I want Kingpin there. So you might have pushed a little harder on Kingpin. You lost me when you said screw Channing Tatum. I don't quite get that.
No? You're a Tatum fan?
Dude, Magic Mike, the Soderbergh movies, Magic Mike, Side Effects, Haywire, he's great in those. He's funny in 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street looks funny. I think Tatum could take the turn that Cooper took, could take the turn that McConaughey took. He does crap now, but the talent is there. I'm not saying he's going to do it in Jupiter.
But Mila Kunis is miscast in that
How
movie.
Do you know? You've seen the preview. Let's talk about movies we've seen. You almost had me, because I do like the Farrelly brothers a lot, until you said The Three Stooges is good. I'm giving it to Ryan.
Yes!
Just because of that?
Well done, well done. That earns me 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever I want. And this rave goes out to 2014. You guys better raise the bar here, because 2013 was a great year in cinema. I can't stand how we don't get enough good movies earlier in the year. Sure, we get A Place Beyond the Pines. It's one here or there. Bring it out, Hollywood. Bring them out early on so we can start talking about them and reviewing them. And we don't have to sit through stuff that got pushed from 2013. That's just crap.
I hate to chill, but come to our festival where you'll see a lot of the movies that'll play later in the year. It's a good early year thing to do.
We'll be there. We'll be there. Matt, celebrating the year 2013, no better way to end it with trivia. 2013 movie trivia. Yourself first, Brian. Brian, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you get stuck on one, you get one trip to the ER. Our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, will help you out.
I will cede to the host.
I'm looking for my other PBR.
Whoa, it's right there.
It's
spilling on the floor. It's actually spilling on the floor right now.
I'll clean that up after trivia.
Great. That means I get to drink tonight. Don't wipe that up, please, dear God.
There you go. That was for you. I spilled it on the Jawbox.
Confetti.
Sorry.
Basically, Jawheads, if you're gambling on this one, take Tellerico after that move that Matt just had there. Question number one in 2013 movie trivia is over to Matt K., correct?
Yes.
Okay. Matt, James Franco starred in Oz, the Great and Powerful, but which actress played Glinda, the Good Witch?
Mila Miscast Kunis.
That is incorrect. Brian, you have a chance
for
a steal early on.
Oh, man, that's a trick question.
Michelle Williams.
You totally tricked me, man.
Why? That's her character name.
I know. What's the trick? I wasn't listening carefully enough.
Yeah, you just heard the movie.
I know. He got so excited.
Somebody got cocky.
He answered it so cocky.
I was ready for that ding.
What an awful film, by Matt the way. As we're talking on the year.
Matt thought he was a man of steel, but he just...
Yeah, question number two. It is 1-0, Brian. Question number two is over to him. In the Jackie Robinson movie 42, what famous actor played the owner of the Dodgers, Branch Rickey, who was responsible for bringing Jackie Robinson to the major leagues?
Harrison Ford. Tried to do a Harrison Ford impression there. Harrison Ford.
2-0, Brian. It's a slaughter already. And here we go. We'll go on to question number three. Matt, here's your shot. In the movie The Butler...
Thor.
In the movie The Butler...
Oprah.
Which actor portrayed President Ronald Reagan?
Was that Reagan? I mean, okay, it was... was it Robin Williams?
He was in the film, though. Good guess there.
Yeah, not bad.
Got a chance for a steal here, Brian, and to blow it wide open.
Alan Rickman.
Rickman, Reagan.
There you go. 3-0, Brian.
It's a good mnemonic device there.
At this point, I'm hoping for a shutout to shut you up over there, Matt. Question number four is over to Tellerico. Arnold Schwarzenegger made a return to the big screen in which he played a sheriff and starred alongside Johnny Knoxville and Forrest Whitaker. What was he doing in that movie? What was the name of that film?
The Last Stand.
See, I would have got that.
4-0. Question number five over to Matt K. Mark Wahlberg played a cop cleared of murder who opens his own private detective firm. Russell Crowe, meanwhile, plays the mayor who hires him to spy on his wife. What was the name of that film?
Well, it wasn't Two Guns, which is also another...
Do you remember movies that almost came out 11 months ago?
Hey, yeah.
You do have a lifeline if you need it.
All right, let's go ahead and go to the ER.
Ooh, a trip to the ER. Question number five. Elias, what was the name of that Mark Wahlberg, Russell Crowe film?
If you repeat something like this, you're a blank record. Mix that into an urban setting.
Broken City?
Wow!
Good clue, man. Thank you.
Well done. Thank Elias.
Thank you, Elias. Well, I just did.
He is on the board. 4-1. It is not a shutout.
No shutout.
What a clue.
Because of the
next
clue.
Time, just spell it for him.
Wow. All right. 4-1. Question number six is over to Brian. In Steven Soderbergh's Side Effects, Rooney Mara is seeing a psychiatrist who's played by what actor?
One of the most underrated performances of the year, Jude Law. Great performance.
5-1, this ball game is over. It's done already. We're only at question number seven. Question seven, Matt. Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez made a movie together that came out in August of this year. What the hell was the name of that crap fest?
It
was a consideration for my bottom 10.
Hey, you got another clue since you're down big if you want to use it. Since Brian's not going to use his clue.
Go ahead. Give me the clue.
Whoa! Second trip to the ER. Elias Rodriguez. What was the name of that Ethan Hawke, Selena Gomez film?
Driving Miss Daisy.
Get creative with this clue. Get creative. Don't just give it away.
The clues are pre-written, so...
Wow.
Here we go. Number seven, right?
Yep.
A car used in a bank robbery is called this.
Oh, my God.
Getaway.
Allie McGraw, Steve McQueen. That would have been a good clue.
There we go.
I think we shouldn't give that to him. He didn't say the getaway.
Yeah, we'll give it to him. It is 5-2. Like I said, it's already over. The last question of the game is over to Brian. In April, And Brian mentioned this movie earlier, so it's a layup. In April, Robert De Niro joined Katherine Heigl, Diane Keaton, Topher Grace, Susan Sarandon, and Robin Williams, who played a priest in this romantic comedy, if you call it that.
It's neither romantic nor a comedy. The Big Wedding.
It was a slaughter. You took a beating like a man.
That was predetermined. I mean, well done, sir. Well done.
Brian Tallarico wins this one 6-2. It was a slaughter, as predicted. There was a tiebreaker. We call it a jawbreaker in case it came down
to
a tie.
Was it a spring breaker?
Not bad, Matt. Not bad.
Look at my shirt.
We would have went to Brian on this one. Better 2003 film that Morgan Freeman was in, Oblivion or Now You See Me?
Oh, they're both bad.
You mean 2013?
You mean 2013.
Sorry, 2013.
The last act of Now You See Me is so horrible. I'm going to go Oblivion.
Incorrect.
You like Now You See Me?
It would have been Now You See Me.
You're going to get that wrong no matter what.
It doesn't matter which way you go on that.
Plays this little joke.
They're both shitty.
The real jawbreaker
was
this.
Good.
Age of Robin Williams closest to. Brian, you got a guess?
Oh, my God. 58.
Elias, can you lock him in at 58? Matt, you got a guess?
He was in his 30s in the 90s. That was 20 years ago. So he's, right around there. I will say 56.
We'd give that to Brian. He is actually 62.
No, oh, wow. Wow, he's getting on.
He is.
Hasn't been funny since 42. I've seen a lot of bad Robin Williams movies, given what I do.
What about Man of the Year?
Wait, is that the... No, it's not me.
It's the
World's
Allen.
Greatest Dad. Is that what you're thinking?
World's Greatest Dad, yeah.
World's Greatest Dad, I don't mind. At least he's trying something different.
Yeah,
that was
there you go.
Fun.
Yeah.
But I wish he would do that more often. Or like Insomnia, the Nolan movie. Like,
yeah.
That was the worst Nolan movie of all.
No, Dark Knight Rises is the worst Nolan movie. my feelings about Williams are... we don't need to get too deep into this. There's clearly talent there. Like, the 1 hour photo is kind of interesting. World's Greatest Dad. So why the hell does he take paychecks like Big Wedding? Well, you could say that about everyone in Big Wedding.
Right.
And that's why I hate those movies. I hate movies where you're just watching people make money.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching them sign the paycheck and not put any effort into it at all.
Like Movie 43, right?
Like Movie 43.
They couldn't even come up with a title.
It's the worst movie of the year.
Matt, it brings us to the end of a great Jaw and the end of a great year of Cinema Jaw.
Yes. Wow. Hey, what a year, man. 2013. Good year in movies.
Absolutely. And a great year for Cinema Jaw. We got to thank our guest, first and foremost, Brian Tallarico.
Thanks
for coming
me.
On. Always a pleasure. And again, for the Jawheads that want to follow you online, where would you ask them to go to?
I guess start with Brian_Tallarico on Twitter, because I use Twitter a lot. And then go to RogerEbert.com and HollywoodChicago.com. And if you happen to catch this in January when Sundance is going on, I'll be on FilmThreat.com every day doing reviews.
And we will be promoting the Chicago Critics
Film Festival.
Film Festival.
May 9th through 15th at the Music Box. Go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
Awesome. Thanks again, Brian, for coming
on. Thanks, guys.
We also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to MoviePass and the New 400 Theaters.
Yeah, there is no better theater in Chicago than the New 400. They are located in the Rogers Park area. They have a full liquor bar and the best prices on first-run movies.
Yeah, you had me at full liquor bar, man.
Not to mention they are playing classic films at midnight, both Friday and Saturday night. So, Chicago Jawheads, check out what's playing at the New 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
And if you happen to be passing through Chicago, I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. We also got to thank the best engineer in the business. Thanks for this episode, and thanks for the entire year of episodes, Elias Rodriguez.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. In all honesty, you do give me room and board. So, Matt, don't clean up that beer that you spilled. And one more thing, Jawheads, we didn't get Christmas presents from you, but that's all right. You could make it up for us. Just please rate us on iTunes. It really does help. So give us your honest opinions. They go with a star rating, 5 stars. We go with Jaws, so don't get confused. Please give us 5 stars. That's what I'm asking. Okay, bye.
He's not begging.
So until next week, until next year, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.